You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it. People who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God does there. I am your host, Joe Epley, and today I am excited to interview Pastor Anthony Caiola. And he wrote this article that I came across. It's on the Center for Rural Ministry, and we'll link it in the show notes. But the title of the article is just Good Systems Can Help Rural Churches Thrive. And the reason this title, before we introduce him, the reason this title kind of intrigued me is because I think that the rural church, by nature, sometimes either by reputation or just by what it is, kind of resists that word of saying, hey, what systems do we have? You know, I think that there's it's just some feelings there about, you know, are we like a big church? Are we not? What's the use and all these things? And I'm excited to dive into the content of this article and let Pastor Anthony kind of walk us through the various things, challenges, need for it, all those things. And so we're excited to interview him today. Pastor Anthony, I just want to say, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing really well. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Well, we're excited for the conversation, but we definitely love on this podcast to get a chance to hear people's story, just kind of hear how your world has intersected the rural church and kind of your journey in faith and ministry. And so pick a starting point and just walk us through the journey, man. Where you been? What you doing? How'd you get here? All those things.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I grew up actually Catholic and came to faith probably around that 17, 18 year old time frame. Went through a personal crisis and God kind of met me in it. It was actually really, really kind of a cool story. And then very early had gotten this kind of itch to want to jump into ministry. It was something that as a young Catholic kid had kind of felt like God was leading me maybe to be a priest and wasn't sure that looked like. Always kind of wanted to be a family man as well. I had a bit of a romantic streak in me and wanted to be a family man. So when I came to faith and kind of got acquainted with Christ from an evangelical standpoint, the awakening in me for ministry kind of came alive again. So I started looking for a good church, one that I was told, I had no idea what I was looking for, but I was told to find a church that preached Jesus and taught the Bible. So I just started asking my friends, hey, do you know a church like this? And I landed at a pretty large suburban church where I lived in North Jersey at the time, outside of New York City, and just started volunteering. Got all kinds of experience in youth ministry and more as I got acclimated and got aware of what ministry looked like and what it was, I think that desire grew. And so my church life, my ministry life began actually in suburban, kind of densely populated urban North Jersey, and never imagined I'd be in rural PA where we are now doing ministry. But what was interesting is we had started out on the church planting track looking to start a church in North Jersey. I think the philosophy has changed now, but at the time, the belief was, or at least people were teaching this belief and this philosophy, that if we reach the city, it'll make its way to rural. And I had the good fortune of marrying a good rural girl from Central PA, and she acclimated well to North Jersey, but definitely we would come home to where she lived when she was growing up and get to, you know, spend time with family. And I got very comfortable here in Central PA. I had a small streak in my elementary years where I lived upstate New York in a very, very small town. And I think God kind of in his providence knew I was going to marry a rural girl and one day land in rural. But what I found during that time was that the gospel wasn't making its way from North Jersey to Central Pennsylvania. We're about 45 minutes west of State College. Certainly there were some good churches here on the ground, but the philosophy just wasn't working. If we didn't go, then the gospel wasn't going to make its way there. And so we were going to plant a church, and we were asked by our denomination at the time if we would replant a church close to our location where we were looking to plant. And through a series of events, we jumped in there. I was about 27 when they gave me this church to repastor and replant. I don't recommend that decision if you're a denominational leader.
I love it. Like, I love it. There's so many stories where people are like, I took a church at 24 and I shouldn't have, but it worked and God showed up.
Yep.
But like, It's funny. Like, every time it's funny to me, where we're like, we're literal children, like, and you're telling us to run things and I don't know what's going on. So
absolutely. Continue on. And the only thing going for me were two things. One, I had that confidence. I'm like, Jesus can raise the dead, you know?
Yeah.
And I had no idea. And then the other thing I had going for me is that God just kept a lot of landmines from going off. You know, we stepped and made a lot of mistakes and nothing blew up. But he was good. I mean, he was very good to us during that time. The congregation was beautiful. About 5 years in, we'd seen God stabilize a very, very, previously a very unhealthy and toxic church. They needed a lot of love. And so, during that time, it was kind of a hard season. We had gotten married. We had two kids during that time and bought our first house. Like we were newly married for the most part, a couple of years in. It was a hard season. So we would retreat out to Pennsylvania quite often. I'd say every 6 to 10 weeks, we would just make a, you know, midweek, late week trip, knowing I had to come home to preach on the weekends. And during that time, we were seeing two things happen. God was blessing the ministry in North Jersey, but it was, even though it was a smaller church, it was very operational. I was dealing with a lot of, you know, administrative things. And my heart was always for discipleship, relationship, that kind of ministry of presence.
Sure.
And we were seeing him bless that when we'd come out on vacation to Central PA. And, you know, so more and more, as he stabilized the church in Jersey, we got this kind of bug. We felt like God started leading us here to Central PA. And that's really what happened. About 5 years in, we felt like he stabilized it. We had a great staff around us, an executive pastor that I, you know, was very confident could take over the church and take them into the next season of health. And we just packed up everything, sold our house, and moved to Central PA. It was wild. People kept asking, like, well, you know, usually in that situation, you trade up to a better job, you know?
I
don't have a job. I got nothing waiting for me in Central PA. I don't have a church that hired me. We just sold everything and moved out here. And it's not quite as of a dramatic story as maybe moving overseas and selling everything, but it felt pretty dramatic leaving North Jersey and moving out to a county with 80,000 people and a town of maybe 6,000 total.
Right. Yeah. No, that's huge. So talk to me about planning a church in, you know, central Pennsylvania, this town of 6,000. What's the town like? What's the church like? Just give us maybe a couple minute snapshot of that journey.
Yeah, well, it's a really cool town. I mean, we've got this river running right through it. It's not a river like I'm used to, like the Hudson River, but it's this river running through. They've got little city blocks. So we're the county seat inside our county. And so we've got these little tiny city blocks, maybe 12, you know, three across, four down, whatever.
Love it.
And it's just cool little town. They put in these black posts, these lights that look like Mary Poppins in the winter. It's just this really quaint, really beautiful town. And so in that way, it kind of scratched a little bit of the urban itch for me. When I walk around downtown with the family, I'm just like, yeah, we could walk a couple
feels
of
like
blocks.
A good town. Yeah.
But it's rural in every sense of the word, the culture, the people, and it's been really neat getting to assimilate all the things you associate with rural, from hunting and fishing. It's all there. And so we planted the church. Again, we had this ministry of presence. Even as a pastor, I think one of my greatest tools in my belt is just the ministry of presence. And it's one of the things that I've loved about rural ministry is that in North Jersey, everything was so densely populated and spread out. I think once in 5 years, I ran into one of our congregants at a grocery store. It was tough. If you were not making plans to meet, you weren't able to engage on any level. There was no touch points. I think coming out here, one of the things that we've really enjoyed is that this desire to be missionally engaged and present in our community has been fully realized. I mean, I coach my kids' soccer. I'm on the borough council, Friday night football games, festivals downtown. And so over time, we've just had this ministry of presence that eventually gave birth to, there was a series of events that led up to it, but gave birth to a community of people saying, hey, we want to do life together. We want to do church together. And so in 2019, in end of November, we launched our kind of a pre-launch in a movie theater locally. And honestly, that was something they'd never seen that. They haven't seen a lot of church plants.
Oh, wow. Sure.
There's a lot of traditional denominations out here that have been in existence for 100 years at beautiful cathedrals, but they haven't seen a church plant in some time. And the idea of meeting in a movie theater was so culturally nuanced. They were like, we just got to come and see.
For sure. I was going to say, if you've never seen it, man, like that's pretty cool. So what's the church look like today? Are you still in a movie theater?
We're not. So COVID hit 3 months later, and we were up for 3 months, down for four when the movie theater shut down. And during that time, we took a leap of faith. We had a team coming around us serving as an elder board, and we kind of took a bit of a leap of faith and moved into a space, signed a year lease. At that point, like many churches, the only one watching online was my mother from North Jersey.
Everyone God else bless had, her, really.
yeah, really. And so we signed a year lease, moved into the space and set a relaunch date. And that was for me, I mean, I kind of think about it leading up to that, the everything leading up to that was kind of pre-launch, soft opening. Mm-hmm. And then coming out of that was kind of our hard launch. And so God's been incredibly good to us. Coming through COVID, we continued to see growth. Coming through there, we didn't just see numeric growth, we saw impact and we nice. Also saw financial growth, where a lot of churches I know were struggling and a lot of my pastor friends during that time, they were getting heat from both sides. I mean, pastors yeah. who lived through that couldn't win no matter what they did.
Yeah.
And our people were just incredibly gracious. And so we just continued to have impact. We continued to be involved. We continued to be engaged, continue to preach the gospel. And we've continued to grow. I had planned to talk a little bit later about the kind of a rule in business. It's called the 1-3-10 rule. But it basically an idea where an organization, when it hits 1, 3, or 10, any one of those numbers, has to reorganize and reevaluate. And so we're kind of in between that 100 and 300 mark at this point, looking and exploring whether or not we need to buy a building at this point. Whether or not we need to go to a second service. And so we're in that kind of redevelopment of the church's life, continuing to gain and build momentum, which has just been incredible. We've kept things simple. We've preached the gospel. We've just allowed people to come as they are, and it's resonated.
Yeah. Wow. And that's a great lead into our conversation because one of my favorite things about rural is you've got such a multiplicity of experiences. Like there's no way to paint a broad brush over what small town has looked like for people. And what I love seeing the most is watching people who have what I call maybe a complex ministry experience, where you've ministered in more urban context or different parts of the world, or at least different parts of the same region. And what happens is you tend to cross-pollinate those lessons, right? And so let's to the topic at hand today. We're going to talk mainly about this article again. That's all about church systems, and I already obviously alluded to it a little bit. How I kind of get like nerdy level excited about church systems because I'm like, oh my gosh, if we can pull this off, like this is going to be so cool, you know. And now I my role has shifted from local youth pastor to running church camps, and I have always been a firm believer that I'm like, man, if we can figure out a way to do something that is administratively sound and is just dynamic as a system, like, well, then it builds a strong platform upon which yeah. God moves and changes lives. And so, but I want to hear your perspectives, because again, even your language is alluding to, hey, I'm passionate about this and how are we reworking as an organization? So maybe start with the lay of the land, right? For lack of a better term, the problem. What is it that first got you interested in not just practicing healthy systems, but what have you noticed about rural churches when it comes to systems? Like, give us kind of the layout of the challenge ahead of us, you know?
Yeah. And so I have a number of family members, many of my family members, aunts, uncles, even my parents, entrepreneurs. So small business sure. owners, I grew up in and around it. And early on realized that small businesses, small organizations of any kind, whether it's nonprofit, church, business, they have limited resources, right? When you look at yeah. larger corporations, their calculation for loss, I mean, whether it's theft loss or financial loss or employee loss, they can throw away millions sometimes and yeah. not even feel it in their bottom line. When you're a small business, you're a little local grocery store, somebody walks off with $50 worth of food, that hits the bottom line. You feel it.
Yeah.
And it's true in any organization. So I think I saw that growing up and having kind of a natural propensity for it as well. I always had this sense of trying to optimize time. I remember playing video games with my brother as a kid, games without a time limit. Yeah. And he'd start like, we'd switch the controller back and forth. And when it was his turn, he'd waste a little bit of time leveling up or doing whatever. And I'd start getting anxiety. What I now know is anxiety as a sure. kid. I just felt, and I would say things like, there's no time. And he'd say, there's no timer. But I yeah. had this sense of like, no, the sun's going to set. We're going to have to go to bed. Like tomorrow's going to come. And when you look at a small business, this idea of optimization and maximizing your time is really important because resource is limited, whether it's financial resource, human resource, you have to get the most out of everything. And so really what's really interesting is that I don't think rural ministry does systems well because we're so used to being loose and relaxed and mom and yeah. pop. But at the same time, I actually think it's more important for smaller organizations to maximize their internal systems and for a pastor and a leader to maximize the systems in their own life so they can get the most out of their schedule and have the greatest impact in their community.
Yeah. Wow. I really love that deep dive. I've never even thought of it in terms of like, not only is it as important, but could possibly be more important. Maybe give us just a few examples of where do you see these areas of inefficiency show up in the rural church? You know, where do you feel like, you know, I know in your article you mentioned, hey, we feel like we're at 70% capacity, but like, where do you see those areas of inefficiency most often hit?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the biggest area of inefficiency, if we're talking about most rural churches and the average church in America, they say is, I don't know if the numbers have changed, but about 80 people. I would say that's probably where you see the inefficiency, right? So we're talking about the 1-3-10 rule. You know, getting to 100 with a certain style of ministry, a certain framework and structure, getting to 300 is going to require you to restructure, rebuild, maybe bring on some staff, but make sure you're working. And then getting to that 1,000 mark, right? And beyond. And then you go 1,000, 3,000, whatever. I've not served in churches of that size. But So I think the first place we begin is examining kind of the key leader. How well are they doing at self-management? So my wife laughs about this. She's not necessarily a systems person. She's got some systems, you know, we run our house and stuff, but she doesn't geek out like I do. And so I just stumbled upon a new software in the last month and a half that I'm very excited to now integrate, you know, where I take my notes, where I do my web clippings when I'm pulling articles for research, my to-do list. I use a software for that. And all of that, and then bringing it together with my calendar, I'm like, I mean, I just want to talk about it nonstop lately because I'm a bit of a nerd on this stuff, and she can't be bothered. But one of the things that I realized as I go into 25, I've started feeling some pressure points in my own life, a little bit more stress, a little bit more overwhelmedness with my schedule and my to-do list. And the first thing I had to look at was myself and go, what does my regular rhythm look like? Do I need to tighten it up? Do I need to get up earlier? Do I need to block certain schedule elements? Do I need a new software? I know it sounds silly, but do I need a new software because everything's just feeling cluttered? I've got stuff in Google Docs and I've got my notes over here and I've got my calendar. Do I need to just reexamine how I'm doing ministry? And then that allows you to kind of then take a look at the organization to realize, hey, maybe I'm the bottle point. I'm the crimp in the hourglass. And when you do that, you start looking at the pieces of your own schedule that you're doing or the tasks that you're executing and going, could I get a team member to do this? Could we get a volunteer to do it? Do I need to hire someone to do this? Do I need to outsource this? Maybe that's a virtual assistant, just getting someone to filter your email. Maybe that's bringing on a part-time staff or an admin. Last January, we brought me an admin on staff who's just offloaded a whole bunch of, you know, little things that, like, I was still the guy ordering the, you know, we're a church plant. We're still a young church. We're still growing. I was still the guy ordering the supplies for the building to clean the building and the toilets and the, and going, okay, where can I free up space so I can better be a minister and a pastor? And then that usually requires some system development. It goes from the person down to the organization to go, what has to happen for me to offload this? Right.
Yeah. Let's highlight this before we really dive into kind of these more practical solutions of what that looks like. But obviously, one of the hallmarks of a rural church is not even, I'm not going to go so far as to say it's a resistance to change, because I think that's an unfair, like, it's an unfair broad brush. But I will say a lot of the attitude I've encountered and others have noticed is there's kind of this folding of the arms that says, well, what we have been doing has been working, so you're going to have to work pretty hard to convince me that what you're doing is better than what we've been doing. And so it's a healthy skepticism, sometimes a stubbornness. But where are those roadblocks, do you think, as you've tried to change your church and walk through that journey, or as you've watched other ministers, what do you think are the most common things that a pastor listening is going to run into as they try and maybe implement some of these changes in their church?
Yeah, well, I do think that that's one of the one you mentioned. I think that's one of the major roadblocks. I think rural in general seems to be behind about 10 years when you look at development and technology. And that's maybe shifted a little bit with technology, but I remember even growing up as a kid, we wouldn't get music or fashion for like 5-10 years later, you know, what I mean? When I'd spent that stint upstate New York. And so I think it's true too in rural business and rural ministry. I mean, we still have business, local businesses that don't use credit card. They have.
Yeah. It always surprises me, but I'm like, oh no, you still exist. Cool. Well, I can't shop here now.
I'm like, I don't carry cash. I don't even know what to do here. You know, I can swipe my phone and send you money, but I can't carry cash. And so there is that kind of natural propensity to simplicity and to, so I think it requires some grace towards our teams. I think it requires a tremendous amount of vision casting, not just for where we want to go, but for the impact we want to have and for the value of whatever we're trying to implement. And then I think it also requires a tremendous amount of discernment for us that we're not just rolling out systems for the sake of systems. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we'll go to a conference and we'll hear from these big church pastors and we'll see these things and we'll want to come home and implement everything all at once. And a system that works for a church of 1,000 is not necessarily necessary. Yeah. For a church of 80.
Well, it might even become burdensome in some ways, right. You know, like I see that for sure.
Yeah. Instead of simplifying, it complicates. And so in that regard, our people have every right to push back because they're going, hey, you're not bringing value to the organization. You're actually making it more difficult to do ministry.
Yeah. So, let's talk about this then. Let's go into kind of, cause what I'm hoping is some of the rural pastors listening today are probably going to be, you know, if we can assume maybe towards the beginning of this journey of implementing systems, or maybe some of them have systems, but they haven't checked in on them in a while, or updated them. And so, let's walk practically, like how, you know, what kind of systems are we looking for? How do we help them flourish? How do you introduce something new in a way that's going to be effective? You know, maybe dive a little deeper into some of these areas.
Yeah. So, I would say right off the bat, we have to identify what the next issue is. I think in that article, I talked about thematic issues.
Yes. Yeah.
What that is like an issue whose theme, the story of that issue or the problem kind of touches every part of the organization, right? It's that crimp in the hourglass. It's that bottleneck. It's that pressure point that you're feeling most frustrated about. Even for this recent change in my own personal schedule and the systems that I have personally for managing my own calendar, it's usually felt emotionally. Usually you're saying, I'm stressed, I'm overwhelmed, I can't seem to get organized. It's usually felt emotionally either by you, your team, your church, and that's usually where to begin, right? And that identification makes the implementation of a system a little bit easier.
Oh,
because
sure.
You're solving an actual problem that people are feeling.
Yeah.
And so they're usually excited to adopt new systems, right? When you come up with an idea of like, how do we problem solve this? Maybe that's a new software. Maybe that's just a new workflow that you build out and say, okay, we're going to do step one, step two, step three. That usually is well received because people understand its value right from the beginning. I would say there's a ton of great tools out there to streamline some of the complexity. And the thought behind a lot of this is if I got hit by a bus tomorrow, could the organization continue to function, right? Or if my secretary who has her own filing system, when I got to that church in North Jersey, we were using a church finance software that was pretty obscure. And I remember making a big push to move over to something more universal like QuickBooks. And there was a little bit of pushback. They didn't like learning a new software. And I just said, look, at some point, you know, love you, have no plans of replacing you, but at some point you're going to step out of this and I can't even hire a bookkeeper. I'm going to have to find someone to be trained on this obscure software.
Sure.
And it would just be beneficial for the organization if we could just make sure that we're all disposable. I mean, me included, that when I, you know, I can be present and complement the organization, but I don't have to supplement the organization by always being there because it's a system that revolves around me. So I would say also seeking outside help, sitting down with somebody who maybe is gifted and wired for this. They don't really teach organizational development in seminaries that I'm aware of. It's something we've been very intentional as we build out interns and internships that this is an area we're exposing our interns to so they're familiar with it. But seeking outside help with someone who knows how to do this well and can sit down, get an outside set of eyes on your organization and go, what you probably need to do is just a data management system that would help you from keeping a Rolodex. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Get your people off of a spreadsheet and put it into a data management system that's really, you know, effective and easy, or scheduling your volunteers. That could be very, very simple.
Yeah, no, I love those insights because again, I think you get a lot of, especially in rural, you get a lot of, oh, well, we do this the way we do it because of this one person, because that is the person who's been doing it. And so, like you said, I mean, I was even thinking back to examples of like worship presentation software where I'm like, okay, I've never heard of this, but but a lot of people use this. And so like, can we switch this over? Or QuickBooks was a huge conversation. And so, that's some smart stuff. Probably I have two more questions. The first one is going to be, can you mark us out on like the journey of adapting a system? Because I think a lot of pastors are going to dive into this and say, okay, I see the felt need. I got the new system. But can you walk us through the steps of what it's like to implement a new system? Because what I'm worried would happen is if a pastor doesn't expect a certain pushback or a certain point in the process that's difficult, they might just stop. They might just say, well, I tried to adapt it, and now we've encountered this. So like, give us kind of the timeline of how this happens, you know?
Yeah, and that's a great question. I think first thing is, as a pastor, you have to start to identify thematic issues. And so once you've identified them, you do that in conversation with your team. Sometimes it's you, but then you know, if I see something in your organization that maybe my team doesn't see, I want to go to them and say, hey, are you feeling this? Are you? And then sometimes they're not even aware of it, but they're like, oh yeah, that's a lot harder than it needs to be. And so then I kind of come in and I want to come alongside. I want to say, okay, let's brainstorm this together. I may already have done the research and have a solution, but I want to ask the questions and go on that journey with them. We want to build the organization as a team and build it together. Now, sometimes not everybody can be part of that conversation. Sure. You know, if you're rolling out a new presentation software, you're not going to have every member of your worship team involved in that conversation, but you may have some of the key influencers or key leaders that are part of that conversation. It can help be part of the conversation when it comes time to roll it out. I also think there's a certain level of discernment, and I wish I had a better answer than just discernment, because that's a really thing to codify.
Sure.
But we have to thread the needle between allowing the inmates to run the asylum.
Sure.
And encouraging them to get on board and be part of the solution. And sometimes, and again, this is where I wish I could be more specific, because every circumstance is unique. Every congregant is different. You have a different relationship with every different leader you have and every volunteer. Sometimes the answer is, hey, then maybe you just can't lead this team anymore. And that's a hard conversation to have, right? But we can't let fear sometimes dictate and determine whether or not this is good for the whole organization. But at other times, I think we try to roll something out, we get a little bullheaded, and we end up blowing out a leader because we're trying to push too hard and too fast. We're not bringing them alongside. We're not giving them space. Sometimes the onboarding process can be a little rocky. We're in rural, so there's plenty of rocky roads. There's plenty of unpaved. Sometimes it's a little bumpy, and we have to be gracious with that. We can't force it and be like, hey, we're gonna turn the light switch off, and when we turn it back on, everything's gonna work smooth. I think we have to be okay with that transition period of, hey, we're starting to roll it out. Some people are early adopting. Some people are using it. I've got to sit down with this guy again and re-explain to him why this is important. Say, hey, can I help you with anything? Can I make this easier? Can I take this off your plate for a season until you get comfortable and adjusted with it? That process of rolling out a new system sometimes creates more stress and requires more time. But I think as a leader, we have to have a long-term vision to say, even though this is creating more tension in the moment, the long-term benefit is going to be of value, right? So the kind of return on our investment or the cost is worth the reward. But again, we have to be able to see out on the horizon and just trust, and then also back it in from there and go, okay, what's the steps to get there slow and sure? And it's a lot of conversation. It's a lot of discipleship. It's a lot of coming alongside, casting vision, explaining the reason for things, asking for feedback so people feel like they're part of the process, and then, you know, making sure that the system we're implementing is the right system, that we've done our research on the back end to identify that this system is actually going to be a benefit to our organization.
Man, that's all some great wisdom. I love hearing that, because again, I think of the times where I have tried to rush in, to jump in, to do something, and I mean everything you said, I could think of a moment where I was like, oh, I should have practiced patience, and I should have had the second conversation, and I should expect the pushback and then still pursue through it, you know. And so no, that's all good stuff. Last question then. And this is maybe the zoom out moment, because again, I think getting in the weeds and saying, okay, we're updating how we do admin, we're updating how we do finance, we're updating how we do service flow, we're updating how we track volunteers or do data management. Like, all these systems are cool, but as detail oriented, task oriented things, it can be really easy to get in the weeds. It can really easy to kind of lose sight. And so zoom out and let's talk ministry. Let's talk salvations. Let's talk people experiencing Jesus. What's the point? What's the purpose? Why would we adopt smooth systems? Why would we even work hard at this at all? And what does it produce for the kingdom of God in our location?
Yeah, and this is incredibly powerful. So I found that systems are really underrated when it comes to church. Nobody cares how their iPhone works. Yeah. They only care how it looks, right? They care, is the camera good? Is it got a nice little bevel on the side? And so nobody cares or celebrates the engineer who built it, right? So the problem sometimes is we neglect systems because it's just not the attractive side of ministry. We want to save souls. We want to preach the gospel. We want to get out there and make disciples, do outreach. And all of that I get. And the other side of it is for maybe a guy like myself, the danger for me is getting wrapped up in system development or organizational development where I feel like I'm having an impact when the reality is every business, every organization is only as good as its, I hate to put this in business terms, but of its sales arm, right?
So
If you're building a great organization, but you don't have any buyers, you don't have anybody coming through the door, then you've not built anything. And the same thing is true for the church. If we get wrapped up and feel like, hey, I've done great work for the kingdom because I built a system, but it's really become an excuse for us not to go out and do the outreach, not to do the evangelism, not to make disciples, not to preach the gospel, then I think it's become a hindrance. The value of building systems is that it empowers us to do all of that. Right? It empowers us and frees us up with limited time and limited team members, limited volunteers, limited resource to say, hey, if we simplify this over here, I won't spend 10 hours a week on data management. I'll spend 2 hours a week. And then the goal is to replace that time, right? Once you free up time and become more efficient in your own life or in your organization, is to free up time to go, okay, can we fill this space with an outreach? Can we fill this space with more ministry of presence where I'm on the ground, I'm in the community, I'm at the next football game? So the goal is that it allows us to do more ministry, not less. Because if we're not careful with a small staff and a small volunteer base and small churches, we could get bogged down in the day-to-day operations of the church and not realize that we're not accomplishing our mission of making disciples. And so the systems empower us to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's all really good wisdom, and I love the zoom out because I think, again, part of what attracted me to this article and your conversation is that you and I share a lot of the same heart on these conversations where I'm like, the moments where I have watched a system work, people palpably feel less stressed, and when they're less stressed, they're more engaged, and when they're more engaged, like, God shows up and does what he does, and changes lives. And so thank you for giving us kind of not just the nuts and bolts, but really the heartbeat behind why we would ever pursue it in the first place. Is because, again, at the end of the day, we are finite people trying to do the best we can with what we've got so that the most people can be reached and discipled and the kingdom of God moves forward. So, last question, I suppose. If somebody wanted to contact you, again, it's hard to find people passionate about these subjects, and it's hard to always know where the wisdom is. So, like, do you have a way that you prefer to be contacted if someone wanted to reach out to and learn more?
Yeah, I mean, I could just give you my church email. It's Anthony at awaken514.church. And perfect. So it's our website, but it's easy to find, awaken514.church.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, we'll throw that in the show notes for sure. And thank you for your willingness to do that. You know, if even one of our listeners reaches out and says, hey, can we just dialogue for 30 minutes about where to start? Who knows? We could be really making a great impact. And so, Pastor Anthony, I want to say thank you for being on the podcast today, sir.
Well, thanks for having me. This is an area of passion for me. It's been an area of a little bit of experience that I've gotten to gain over the years. And I'm always grateful to share anything that I've learned in the process.
Well, thanks. Well, from all of us at Rural Advancement, I just want to say again, I hope you're walking away from this podcast encouraged and challenged and inspired. Again, it is our commitment to not just speak to where you're at, but to bring people in who get it, who understand the pressures we face and the processes we have to walk through. As usual, if you want to promote the show, we love when you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or you can find our podcast at ruraladvancement.com. But true to the rural fashion, honestly, the best way to spread this podcast around is to look at another rural leader and say, hey, I've got conversations you need to be a part of. So help us spread the word. For this week, I've been your host, Joe Epley. He has been Pastor Anthony Caola, and we will see you next week.